and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is Tuxa Lerzel.
And Stephanie Domingo.
Mm-hmm. I am recording on land belonging to the Ojibwe, Ottawa, Potawatomi, and Wyandot Nations.
I come to you from North Canton, Ohio, where I am recording on land belonging to the Kaskaskia Nation.
All of these nations are some of many still very much out here doing their thing, and y'all need to recognize.
Yeah. Better recognize.
You best recognize. For those who don't know, Beyond Reproach is the show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government. And as per usual, we be drinking and we be swearing.
And we be bantering like really early.
Wow. Oh my God. So like before we even finished the opening segment, we got lost on a tangent. Oh, dear, dear me. Stephanie's story today, she let me know, is from the colonial era, 1773. And we have talked a lot on the show before about how colonial Americans drink very differently from the way we drink today. Cocktails weren't even really a thing yet. They didn't exist yet. But on special occasions, punch was about as close as you could get in the late 1700s. Most of the time, you would just have like a plain hard cider, a beer, maybe some wine. You might have straight spirits, usually rum or whiskey or brandy, usually served warm because ice wasn't really a thing just yet. If you wanted to get fancy, you might add some water to your spirits or some sugar. Yeah, we've had, whiskey sling that we drank back in episode 35. It was literally just whiskey with some sugar and water added to it. Or sometimes they would mix different things together. Yard of flannel and stone fence were all common tavern drinks that combined spirits with beer or cider. We've had a few of these on the show already. We've had the stone fence, which is hard cider and rum mixed together. And we fucking hated it. It was disgusting.
I said then, and I will say it again, it tasted like a foot. So funky. I was not prepared.
I really think a lot of it had to do with the hard cider that I chose. If we had chosen a sweeter, less funky hard cider, it would have been probably fine.
Yeah.
That's on me, rough. I think. Yeah. We've also had the flip. We had a hot ale flip, which was dark. It was like a nut brown ale heated up and mixed with rum, molasses, and a whole egg.
Yeah.
Which made it, it was so surprisingly delicious. We both were like, ugh, what is this? And then it was so good. It was like thick and rich and creamy and almost tasted kind of like a latte, but with no coffee. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a chai or something.
Yeah. It was surprisingly delicious.
It was really, really good.
So today we are drinking another popular colonial era tavern concoction that mixes dark beer, this time a porter style beer, with dark Caribbean rum. Sometimes they would use brandy or applejack even to make this.
Oh, okay.
And a little sugar and nutmeg. Got to have that nutmeg in there.
And lime sometimes. Juice, right?
Yeah, sometimes they would use lime juice. Not always. If they could get it and they had limes on hand, they would put lime juice in it as well. But that wasn't always. So this common colonial era beverage was called rattleskull, which was a British slang term for someone who talked too much.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It basically meant that if you drank a rattleskull, you'd be spilling all the tea at the local tavern. It was... Yeah, it's really, really good for loosening those jaw gums.
So is it like, I guess because of the rum in it, right? It like brings the proof up from just beer.
Yeah,
is that exactly what they mean? Yeah, like it gets you drunk.
Yeah, and I guess your skull is rattling because you're talking so much.
Of course. Okay. It was their version of a Chatty Cathy.
Yes, exactly.
A rattle skull.
Cool. So let's take a little taste. Cheers.
Yeah, cheers.
When I was a kid at school learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, If you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
It's good. It's better.
Yeah.
It's, I thought that the lime juice was going to be really weird, but it doesn't taste citrusy. It's just sort of sharp without being, like, you don't taste lime.
Yeah. You taste a little something, but yeah, it's, yeah, like you said, it's sharp. It's like like a brightness to it. It's good. Yeah. Cause it balances out like the nuttiness, or at least the porter that I have is kind of nutty.
Mine is very sort of like coffee flavored, the porter that I'm drinking. It's tasty. I feel like this would be really good in the fall.
Yeah.
Really good for like sitting around a campfire and drinking this would be good. You just pour everything into a mug and stir it up and add the nutmeg on top. I will say that we're using a brown sugar syrup because that touch of molasses is much closer in flavor to the sugar that would have been available in the colonial era. But some rums are sweeter and some porters are maltier than others. So you might not actually need the sugar syrup. If you want, you can leave it out and taste before you add it to see if you need to put it in there. But I think it's nice. You don't use very much. It's like what, half an ounce?
Yeah.
So I think it's really nice.
I think it's really good. I was not concerned, but I was just curious to know how it was all going to blend together. Cause I'm just like, citrus in this dark beer, like
weird. Totally.
I wasn't worried about the rum because rum can blend into anything. I'm like, it's just going to be spicy and delicious.
Yeah, and we've had these sort of like beer and rum mixtures before. It was the lime juice was the outlier that I was like, I don't know about you.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah, it just adds a little bit of like a brightness that you don't literally taste lime juice at all.
No.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, it's nice. So that's the Rattle Skull. I don't really have a much history to go with it because it was, you know, it's been around for a long time in the colonial era and people were just mixing shit together. So I don't know who invented it. I don't know where it was invented, but
yeah.
People were drinking this in 1773. That's all I know.
And that's all we need.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess I'll jump in. So I know that this happened, you know, we recorded in advance and this is going to come out months or at least a month plus after the midterm. I feel like we need to take a moment to celebrate ourselves and what we did.
Everyone deserves a pat on the back.
Yeah. I don't want to say like I'm an oracle, but like maybe I'm an oracle because I just felt like the media wanted this red wave so badly that it just didn't seem.
Because it's good for ratings. When politics is mess, people watch the news more.
I don't know. Like, I think that there are a lot of women who are like, no. And like the LGBTQ plus community is constantly under threat. Like they're not down with this shit. Like people of color as well. Like we're going to come out and say absolutely not. And that is what we did. And I'm really proud of us.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Gen Z also came out, like more Asian people voted in this midterm than in any other midterm. Like this is really, really positive. And I think it is like a preview of things to come, hopefully.
Oh God, hopefully. I know. I
and
don't
like maybe I'm getting
to be...
too hopeful, but like at the same time, I'm always hopeful. Like I'm a fucking Black woman in America. I have to be.
Yeah.
There's no alternative for me. We're here because of our community and all of the people that I mentioned, like have community and like, that is what is nourishing and that's why we, despite the threat that we are constantly under, like it is our community that binds us and keeps us positive, at least for me. And yeah, what we did was fucking historic. Yes, we had some losses. What
fucking
can't you
Lauren,
believe?
Lauren Boebert ended up winning in the end.
I know. That was really heartbreaking. Because we all danced so hard at the thought of her not winning. It made me so happy.
You know, and we lost the, the house, but like
there was the, it would have been outrageous for us to keep the house, but the fact that we have the Senate still.
Yeah.
The last time that a party in power gained seats in the house was after 9/11. So we are in a 9/11 type of moment. Like that is fucking historic. Like this is something that we are going to tell other generations that we did.
Taking bodily autonomy away from women surprisingly is a bad look. Nobody could have predicted that.
However, white women didn't fucking care in mass. 70%+ of y'all, like, you need to get your sisters together. Yes.
Jesus
Christ. In Georgia, I think it's 72% of white women voted for Herschel Walker. Like, get the fuck out of here. I don't know if that was everywhere, but like 70%+ of them did that. Like, you guys are voting like white men, and like, it is not a good look, girls, ladies. Get your
Well, there's together. That whole thing about like, did you see that poll that I think it was Fox News put up something about how single women
vote
for Democrats, but married women vote. Yeah.
Yes.
Like married women are afraid to vote against their husbands.
That's so sad. That is so, that's so disheartening. And I love that guy having a freak out about single women, and like, he's like, oh, we're all depressed and like, we don't want any man in our life. And it's like, we are living well because we don't have men in our lives.
Girl, nobody wants you fucking telling us who to vote for and shit. Calm down and take several seats.
Yeah, he said women went crazy in this midterm.
I wonder why, asshole.
Oh, I
look around you. What do you think happened that would have pissed off women this year?
You know, he doesn't know.
How is anyone supposed to know what
he said? Ladies, we just need love, you know, we just need some love in our lives.
Well, maybe people are afraid to get your love because you're going to get them pregnant and then they have to be forced to have a baby that they don't want.
Yeah, it's trash, but
nobody wants your love, motherfucker.
Facts. You can say that again. Nobody wants your love, motherfucker. But yeah, we need to just celebrate ourselves because we did something really, really historic. And I think the news is kind of downplaying. And I hope when this comes out, we are still licking the tears of the Republicans in our lives, because want them to be sad for a really long time. I want them to, I mean, they're not going to reconsider their positions, but like, I want them to be sad.
The one thing I'm very excited about is that this means that no matter what happens going forward in the future, Mitch McConnell will never be majority leader ever again for the rest of his life.
Yes. Isn't that delicious? Oh, it's so good. I mean,
I still hope he gets dick cancer and dies, but like,
he's not gonna. Somehow he's gonna live longer than me. It makes no sense, but it's gonna happen. Like, it's the worst ones never die like they should.
Yeah,
but it does make me happy that he's never gonna have that position of power again.
Yeah, I don't understand like how he hasn't gotten like shell rot yet, or
I love that. But I should probably get into my scandal. But we did that shit. Moving on.
Yes.
So, in the dead of night, on the night of December 16th, 1773, several dozen colonists, most of whom were affiliated with the Sons of Liberty. Are you familiar with the Sons of Liberty?
I am not.
Oh, but you are. You don't know that you are, but you are. So they tiptoed aboard three ships in the Boston Harbor. These ships were carrying tea. Tea sent by the East India Company.
God.
Yeah, working through the night, these white dudes, some of whom were cosplaying indigenous folks. No one asked for that, but okay. They cut open 340 chests of tea, and they dumped over 45 tons of tea into the waters of the harbor. This was a protest against the Tea Act that was imposed by the English that summer. You know, as everyone already knows, this event, we know it as the Boston Tea Party. And it still remains one of the most iconic moments in U.S. history. History books,
I'm so
they
excited
love
about this story.
Yeah, this story is good. History so, books, what?
Can I interrupt for just a second?
Oh, please, please.
That when I did my Detroit.
I can have a sippy sip.
Yes. Well, first of all, I want to say, I wish you had told me to make a cocktail with tea.
I know, I didn't, you know, I wanted to tell you, but at the same time, I'm like, he's going to be so thrilled. So I'm just going to keep this shit to myself.
You should have told me. But anyways, I want to say.
This story involves Samuel Adams, who is one of the Sons of Liberty. So there's a little beer connection, even though he has nothing to do with beer. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that's not the beer that we're drinking.
No.
But I actually had a whole part of my outline when I did my Detroit Uprising story. I had sort of a whole like ending segment that I ended up cutting for time because that story was so long, where I was talking about how people are like, oh, black people burning down their own communities, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, but do you have that same energy for white rebellions and white uprisings like the Boston Tea Party, Barbara? Do you, Barbara?
No, Babs doesn't. She don't. Yeah, that's amazing.
So it's funny that like I wish I hadn't taken that out now because you're talking about
the Boston Tea
Party.
Oh, that would have been so fun. Yeah. I really wanted to tell you like, oh, when you said punch, I'm like, oh, maybe it's going to be a punch with tea. And then I got the recipe that you sent and it was beer. I'm like, oh, I should have.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I considered doing a punch, but it's so hard to make a punch in a small batch. And especially considering we're not recording together, it would be so much work for you to find all these weird fucking ingredients.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. No, I understand that. And I just felt like if I said tea, you would have known. So I'm like, I'm just going to keep it to myself. It's fine. I really like this drink.
Yeah. But, no, it's tasty. Yeah.
Yeah. You said you wouldn't have known.
I probably wouldn't have. I mean, I'm honestly, when you give me hints like that, I'm not trying to guess what your story is.
Yeah.
Because I want to be surprised.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
Yeah.
It just seems like 17 anything and plus T.
Yeah.
I just assume like, let me not say anything.
You're right. I might have guessed. Yeah.
Because it's so obvious. Like, even if you slept for 90% of a history class, you know about this, you know?
Yeah.
Or at least you think you know about this. So. Yeah. The Boston Tea Party, it was a huge event. It's something that history books love to talk about. They fondly remember this like kind of carnival like atmosphere.
Imagine that. When there was an uprising against oppressors and there was a carnival like atmosphere and a bunch of destruction.
Yeah.
It was white people doing this.
But it was white people, so it was a great time. So this was a catalyst to the American Revolution. The story that I learned in school went something like this. These sturdy patriots responding to an increase in their, you know, consumer goods. Things are being taxed more and they're not down with it. First, it was the Stamp Act. Now Britain was coming for their beloved tea, their peachy tips, and they would not stand.
Yeah.
They were so pissed, right?
Gotta have your PG tips.
They were so pissed. They cried, no taxation without representation, et cetera, et cetera. However, it turns out the tax that they were most tight about reduced colonial tea prices. But facts are stupid. Really, really stupid. Yes. Reduce colonial tea prices. I'm going to get into it. But so the scandal that I'm doing is the event that was known at the time as the Action Against the Tea or the Destruction of the Tea, which was a true act of rebellion and revolution, but just not the ones that we were told about in schools.
Everything first, we learn is lies.
I mean, I'm going to get into this, but it seems, I shouldn't even say, but yeah.
Okay.
So much of what we were told as children especially was lies. They know that kids like to like dress up like Indians, and I feel like they kind of just latched onto that little bit.
Encouraged
and just ran
that.
With
yeah.
it. Yeah. But first, a toast. Let us raise our glass to the tax break that led to the creation of the United States of America. Cheers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I thought we hated taxes. So starting with Bacon's Rebellion in Virginia in 1676, overthrowing colonial governments just kind of became a thing that would happen semi-regularly. Not all the time, but like there would be this rebellious fervor that would rise up and would be squashed by the local mm-hmm. government, the people in charge at the time. So by 1760, there had been 18 mixed race uprisings. There had been 6 black rebellions and over 40 plus riots of various origins. Some of them were race riots. Some of them were riots about other things. There's a lot of unhappy people in the colonies. By this time, there also emerged a ruling class of like a white political and social elite who had been in the colonies for some time. They'd made their money and they were trying to protect what they had, which, you know, mm-hmm. it makes sense.
Imagine an oligarchy in America. I can't even imagine.
I'm just so glad you're sitting for all of this because like your knees would have buckled. Wow. Like I what? Mean, I
literally.
You're shook. You're shocked now, right? You're like,
yes.
Do you want me to give you a moment? Collect yourself. So this local leadership, they saw the possibility of deflecting as much of this rebellious energy away from them and like towards England and England's local officials. Historians suspect that this was not a conscious conspiracy, but it was just a series of tactical responses to this rebellious energy, this fervor that was rising up every now and then.
Okay.
So after 1763, with England victorious over France in the Seven Years' War, do you remember the Seven Years' War and OG Dubs kind of starting it?
I sure do, yeah. Whoopsie daisy.
Whoops. Him. Boys will be boys starting
my bad.
So power hungry men who were in the colonies at this time, they were no longer threatened by the French. If you remember, they had control of the fur trade, and the fur trade was extremely lucrative because they mm-hmm. were working with native peoples instead of just genociding them. I mean, they weren't mm-hmm. doing great things. They were essentially stealing their fur, but like they were kind of
as bad as the English, yeah. but still not great. Yeah.
They weren't great, but they were exploiting the native people. They were just like, I'm going to work with you so you can make me money. And like native peoples, I mean, they had no idea of like commerce and like anything. They're just like, okay, this guy's not killing me. And he wants me to show them where the beavers and shit are. So I can do that. Yeah. So with the French out of the way, these power-hungry white men were just like, they saw that they only had two things in their, like, in the way of them ascending to the top of the ladder. Not that the British were against them, but they saw the British and just indigenous people were like the last two things in their way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The British...
I mean, story of this country, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the story of this country emerged...
You're in my way.
Emerges so early. So the British, when they won this war against the French, they didn't want smoke with native people. They declared all Indian land, they declared like all land beyond the Appalachian to be Indian land, out of bounds to white settlers. They're just like, don't even look over there because we're not going to protect you if you try to steal their land. So don't do it, girl. And this was very unpopular. Colonists, they knew that the colonists who didn't arrive with money, the only way to get wealth and like feel secure in this quote unquote new world is to have stolen land, you know? So
literally, I mean, yeah. To this day.
To this day,
I know. Generational wealth is to have land.
Yes. And you just did a whole story about redlining, yes. Exactly. They had to pay off their war debts because war is expensive. Mm-hmm. And they look to the colonies as kind of like a coin purse, like a like sure. a pocketbook.
Yeah.
And this is the main conflict, that we had colonial elites who felt that they were less in need of British rule. They felt like stifled by British rule. At the same time, the British needed the colonists' wealth. Yeah. They needed that money. They needed those tax dollars. So I found a quote from Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States. I got a lot of my information from the book's fourth chapter. It's called Tyranny is Tyranny. It's really, really good. It's dense, but it's like, it's good.
Yeah.
So this is from the book. He said that the war had brought glory for the generals, death to the privates, wealth for the merchants, and unemployment for the poor. Big Shocking. Cities, I know, right? Big cities had expanded rapidly during the war. And there were all these newspaper headlines that complained of beggars and what they considered wandering poor who are in the streets of their cities. And they, you know, they didn't like that. However, at the same time, there were these editorials that questioned the distribution of wealth. Like, when regular people were allowed to write in the paper, they're just like, but what about this? Like, why are there people in the street when, like, this man has all of the money? Like, make it make sense, friends. Make it make sense. Like, I know, this is like today.
It's today. Literally, there's like, all the rich people are complaining. But fuck, did you hear about fucking, I'm sorry to go on a tangent.
No, please do.
Did you hear about Gwyneth Paltrow urging all of her followers to vote Republican in California because all the rich people in California want a Republican governor to come in and clear out all the homeless people so they don't have to look at them anymore? Because the homeless problem in LA is so visible.
Is she even out though? Like, ew.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're not going to go Republican in LA. Like, it wasn't going to happen.
No, but there was a guy who was Republican who became a Democrat who ran against a Democrat and Jesus he almost Christ. Won. And a lot of people, like Katy Perry, was backing him, and probably Gwyneth. I didn't know about her, but like, I think I know what you're talking about. I think it's this guy who was a lifelong Republican, but ran against, knows that he's in California, that he can't be a Republican.
So he went, he's doing cosplay as a Democrat.
Correct. Yes.
He changed his middle name to Low Tax.
Exactly. He lost to a black woman who is totally an establishment Democrat, but like better than that.
Sure, better of course. That. Yeah. But yeah, that, I mean, my point is that like rich people are like, oh, homeless people. I don't want to look at that.
But are they really seeing, like, are they going outside of their little mansions? It's incredibly visible.
You can't go anywhere without seeing them. Oh, is it? Them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So do something about that.
Exactly. Hello.
How is
like, maybe like you want to just throw them in the river? Like, what? Fix it.
Oh my God. Like, yeah, I don't want to go off on a huge tangent, but like during the pandemic, New York, because so few people were coming to the city because we were a hotbed of sickness, I don't know if you know about this, but they opened up hotels and they housed the homeless there and they gave them medical care. And so many, I want to say it was like 50% of them were able to get jobs and like get off the system. They just needed housing to do that. They needed a safe place. They needed Wi-Fi. And they got off the system. Like,
how are you supposed to get a job if you don't have anywhere to take a shower or use the internet or print something?
God, yeah, I could talk about this for hours, but they were like shocked by this. They're like, oh, that's. What?
Nobody told me that helping people would help them.
basically. Oh my God. That is a direct quote. Nobody told me that helping people would help them. It's true. So going back to my story, unfortunately,
sorry. I
can talk about this forever. But so during this time, similar to today, 10% of Boston's taxpayers had about 66% of Boston's taxable wealth, while the lowest 30% of tax-paying population had no taxable property at all. Wow. The propertyless people this was back then, they could not vote. So they, like indigenous people, like black people, like white women, could not even, not only could they not vote, they could not participate in town meetings because they, at this time, they were barring, they're barring, like, I guess, city council meetings to people who could vote. Landowners. They're like, I don't want to, I don't want to hear you poor people. Like, you're not going to vote for me. Get the fuck out of here. So this included like sailors, people who were apprentices, people who were servants, and just like a lot of working, like laboring classes of people were not able to just hear about governmental processes that were directly affecting their lives.
Yeah.
So in Boston, the lower classes, they're just like, fuck this. There's more of us than there is of you. So what you gonna do? So they started showing up to meetings. They would barge into these town meetings and they would vent their grievances. And yeah, it was incredible. And it's like, why good can't we them. Tell? That's... Yes. And like, this is why I did this story, because it's like, there are so many things that we should learn about that are just like so revolutionary and in the real sense of revolution that, but we don't want to talk about that. So the governor of Massachusetts, he wrote this in his diary, and I fucking cackled when I read this. And he's talking about these town meetings. He says, the meanest inhabitants, by their constant attendance there, generally are the majority and outvote the gentlemen, merchants, substantial traders, and all the better part of the inhabitants.
That's so mean of them to have their own opinions and
they're care about so mean.
Their own lives. Yeah.
They really just, they hurt my feelings, and they're not part of the better part of the inhabitants that aren't mean to me.
Wow. Okay.
Grow up. So what happened was in Boston around this time of the destruction of the tea, there were certain lawyers, editors, just like people about town, but also smugglers. Mm-hmm. I think I might do a mini about this. They were fucking running shit in the colonies.
Wow.
Just doing all like black market trades and but also making so much money that they became part of the upper echelon of society, not like British upper echelon. Sure. Like, you know, 5% as opposed to the 1%.
Sure.
So these people with other business owners, they felt like they were being excluded from certain ruling circles of Englishmen. Yes, they were being excluded. So they decided that they were going to low-key organize a working class mob for them. Yeah.
Okay.
Right? So they use speeches, editorials, because a lot of them, like the owner of the Boston Gazette was part of the Sons of Liberty. And it's so funny, we think of these revolutionaries, Sons of Liberty, as like rabble rousers. And it's like, no, they were all business owners. They were really wealthy men. They were not in their 20s. They were in their 40s. Like, these were men who were just protecting their own.
Yeah.
So they use speeches and editorials to influence the working class. They shape their opinions and they mobilize them into action. These elites were keenly aware of the declining fortunes, mostly because of them, and the resentment that came along with this of just ordinary townspeople. But they were frightened by the thought that the mob that they created, that their grievances might spill over to them. They're like, don't look at our wealth. Look at the British. Yeah. Look at them. And here we have, like, we have American politics kind of in a nutshell.
It's the same fucking shit that's happening today. Yeah. I mean, everyone can vote, but like, most people anyways.
Most people can vote. Yeah. Compared to back then, a lot more. I mean, everyone can
vote. We're fighting. Yeah. The ruling elite that don't want people to be able to vote have found ways to make sure that certain people can't. But for the most part, most people can vote. But other than that, it's the same fucking shit. And it's, this story has happened over and over and over. It's like the whiskey rebellion that it was the ruling elite and not the British at the time, but like
Yeah.
No, the poor people are like, fuck you. We traded in, you know, we fought for you against the British, and now you're doing the same shit to us that the British did. Fuck you.
Yeah. So these wealthy people, they felt, I don't know. I did a lot of research for this, and most of it came from Howard Zinn. It does seem like these wealthy white dudes, despite having so much power and influence, they did feel poor compared to the British, which is like, not, I know it's not an excuse, but like, I think if you believe that you're poor, then you can get poor people on your side. And I think that is what happened back then.
Well, like, yeah, that's like,
it's not a lie if you believe it kind of thing
too. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, my swimming pool isn't as big as the guy next door.
Yeah. Oh. My cousin only gave me 1,200 acres of land. Yeah. That guy has 15 acres of land. It's not fair. Yeah. So that was just all background. So let's get into the, you know, the action against the tea. So the saga began with the British government's bailout of a corporation that was deemed too big to fail. The East India, I know, it's like all the parallels. Oh,
the British East India Company.
Oh yeah, the British East India Company, they enjoyed record profits because it had a monopoly since the 1600s in South Asia. They basically, they didn't own China, but they like really controlled the Chinese market. But also they owned most of the Indian subcontinent. Mm-hmm. So they were just running shit, buying their pockets.
The Amazon of the day.
Absolutely, absolutely. So in 1772, the company was hit really, really hard by the collapse of the European stock market. Capitalism did what capitalism does. It went kaput. It went bust. It shat the bed. So this company had all of this like unsold goods that sat in their warehouses that they had to pay for. And during this time, colonial smugglers, people like John Adams and co, they were filling a void left by this huge behemoth of a company struggling. They're like, oh, we're going to make all of the money. Like they... So the East India Company, they put not all of their money in the stock market, but most of their money. So like all of the ill-gotten gains that they made by just stealing the resources of Asia, they put into the stock market. Okay. And when it went bust, they was Poe, you know? They got no monies. Yeah. So they approached the British government, you know, outturned pockets. Hey guys, like, can you help us? We are one of the, like, we give
need
you
a bailout.
Yeah, that's what they said. Like, we are one of the biggest companies in this, you know, this whole empire. Like, you're not gonna let us go bust like that. Like, you need us, right? So you're gonna help us. So members of parliament in like I love British Parliament. I love how they really just try to shame people. And it's just like very theatrically done. So they staged these committees. They had all these hearings where they, you know, like finger wagged at these greedy company officials because they had returned from India and China fucking rich. But then all of a sudden, like they have all these debts, like all the money just went into their pockets instead of into the company. And they're just like, no, we're not.
Imagine that.
I know. Right.
It's so.
This story is today.
It's exactly the same thing that's happening fucking 300 years later. Jesus Christ.
When I found this story, I'm like, oh, this is today. This could be ripped from the headlines. This literally is today. So they, you know, they finger wag. They're just like, you should have done better, but you know, they fucking didn't do better. So they were the MPs, you know, these members of parliament, they were trying to figure out a way to keep this company solvent. They thought about maybe nationalizing part of it temporarily.
Elizabeth Warren was there.
they were just by any means necessary, they were trying to keep it afloat because if they failed, especially because they just had this big war with France, if they failed, the British Empire not would crumble, but like would be significantly like impaired if they went under. So they were trying to find ways to work with them. They discussed schemes about unloading, like how on earth can we unload this? Apparently they had 18 million pounds of surplus tea at this time.
Jesus.
What? You guys need to stop robbing.
Yeah. Stuck in a shipping container in the Suez Canal.
Basically. So the European market was already saturated at this time, because there was a lot of trade coming out of Holland. Like the Dutch had their own system going. Like the Dutch, we have the Dutch to thank for capitalism. So they were already on this shit, like trying to rob Asia even before the British did it. I mean, the British did it more, but like the Dutch started it. So they already had shipping routes long established. Okay. Yeah. And that's how the smugglers in the colonies were getting their tea, was through the Dutch.
Ah, I see.
So the MPs, they were saying, okay, we need to help the East India Company. They need to do better, but we need to help them. Their idea was to reduce their tax burden. They wanted to find some way that they could reduce the tax burden for this big company and allow them to offload their excess tea. And since the European market was so saturated, they're like, we're going to dump this on the Americans. We're going to make it rain tea over there, and it's going to be great. So there were two routes that they could do this, because there were the two taxes involved. One tax was on the tea coming through Britain on its way from India and China. That's like one leg of the journey that they can tax. And they can also tax the like import duty, like when it arrives in the colonies. Historians suspect that they could have cut both taxes and still made their numbers work, but they didn't. They decided that they were going to eliminate the tax on goods coming from China into Britain. They're like, y'all don't gotta pay any tax.
Wow.
I'm like, again, okay, this could be ripped from the headlines. But they decided that because the American colony is still a colony, like we need to make them pay something. We can't completely just let them, I guess, you know, have all this excess tea for a very, very discounted price. They decided that they were going to reduce the tea tax moderately. They would still have to pay it, Americans. So the only people who stood to kind of suffer from this change in policy were the smugglers. They feared that there would be big financial losses when they had to compete with the British for prices.
Sure, I get that. Okay.
Yeah. Because these colonial smugglers, they had become elite based on this illegal business peddling duty-free tea from Holland.
Yeah.
And it's like now the tea from Britain also duty free. So like, what we don't do now? Yeah, totally. They were like, wait a minute. So, you know, some of these men just so happened to be Sons of Liberty, and Sons of Liberty are the ones who did, you know, who dumped out all the tea. Just coincidence. Quinky dink.
Shocking. Yeah. Quinky dink. Yeah.
So few people in London thought that this sweetheart deal would be newsworthy. They thought, okay, surely American colonists would not object to getting discounted tea, like good tea at bargain prices.
Yeah.
They were getting they were getting high quality tea that was at the same price or slightly lower than what they were getting at on the black market because of this reduction, because this Tea Act of 1773, it reduced the tax. It didn't eliminate it, but it reduced it. But they were wrong. They were totally wrong. Colonists, they were not happy. Their fundamental issue was that they wanted to be governed by themselves. They wanted to tax, make their own taxes, and then rule the colonies as they saw fit. They, even though they were getting a tax break, they're like, we didn't vote for this tax. Like, we don't have a representative in parliament who was advocating on our behalf. Because maybe if we did, like our elites would say, like, actually, no, don't make it cheaper for colonists because we have our own business going.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. I know, which so is the, fucked
oh
up.
Oh my God.
Right?
So the rich Americans were like, no, you can't make tea cheaper.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my God.
You can't make tea cheaper because we got the cheaper tea. You can't be kept competition? The free market? We claim to love it. Oh, but yeah, right? Isn't this story amazing?
That's what this is all about.
Yeah, so they wanted to tax and rule themselves. Their rallying cry was no taxation without representation. But it wasn't down with high taxes, which is what Fox News like wants us to believe. Like,
sure, that's what we have been told our entire lives.
Yo, we've been lied to. Like the founding fathers, it was about representation. It was not about low taxes at all, at all, at all. It was fucking lies. So land taxes and poll taxes, as well as import duties of like sugar, molasses, wine, they were all a much greater tax burden compared to this, you know, tax on tea. Do you know anything about the Stamp Act?
I mean, not really. I've heard of it and I know that it was an issue, but I don't, that's
it caused a really big rebellion. And I don't even really know the finer details, but like the Stamp Act, it went through in 1765, and they like the British Parliament was just literally trying to tax everything that like colonists need. And they eventually, I think it was like, it took them 4 years. There were all these protests. They had to reverse it. There's like, okay, actually, no, we don't want these problems. Like, we're just going to tax certain things. So the tea tax was a relic of an act called the Townsend Revenue Act. This happened 2 years after the Stamp Act. And it placed import duties on things that the colonists needed to just like build, like things like paint, paper, lead, glass, and certain metals were taxed. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, no, girl, again, like the Stamp Act, like you can't do this to us. We are a growing colony. We need we need glass. We need lead, even though lead is going to kill us. We need lead. We need all of these things. So
I mean, we didn't know that until like the 80s.
I know. Like, I shudder to think like how much lead was even happening back then. Cause it's like, it sounds like they built their houses in lead. So it took 3 years to have this Townsend Act repealed. And they repealed all of these taxes except for the tea tax. They decided that they were going to keep a 3 pence per pound tea tax. And this tax was so minuscule, it was barely felt by most of the colonial consumers who always at this time had access to smuggled tea. They were not buying this tea. So it's just like, okay, whatever. Yeah, you can tax me, but like I'm getting it from this dude I know, you know? So yeah, tax away. So this tea tax, it was symbolic. It was kind of a thing that colonists could rally against. The average commoner would maybe enjoy like a sip or two of tea once in a blue, but they weren't doing the whole like British tea thing. They didn't have, you know, the cutlery, all of the porcelain and shit. Like that stuff was really prohibitively expensive for the vast majority of people in the colonies. So calling for a boycott on tea paired nicely with just the whole lower class revolutionary sentiment that was happening on the ground.
Sure.
Tea was an easy and just very popular target. And yeah, I feel like now is time for a good time for a break.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little tea time.
Okay. Tea time. All right. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Hashtag History. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Leah. And if you're a history nerd,
or even a history hater,
this is the podcast for you.
Even if history was your least favorite subject in school, we can guarantee you will like this podcast because we talk about all the things that your history textbooks did not.
Things like how the Bonnie Prince Charles and his Jacobite uprising was a bit of a disaster.
Yeah, or how the pharaoh Akhenaten was so disliked by Egyptians that they literally purged his name from nearly all of their records and pretended like he had never existed.
And we do all of this while drinking and rating a custom-made cocktail specific to that week's topic.
So grab a drink, take a seat, and hang out with us each week as we learn all about history's greatest stories of controversy,
conspiracy,
and corruption.
So yeah, we're back, y'all.
That we are.
So you made a tinkle. What is it? What's that like bathroom sign that people have? Like, if you sprinkle when you tinkle, be a sweetie and wipe the seedy. Yes.
Oh, have you seen that? Oh my God. No.
Oh, maybe this is just in black households. It's usually done in like needlepoint and it's like right above the toilet.
Oh my God. I need that.
Yeah. I'm gonna post something. this is ubiquitous. Like, I've seen it so many times in my life.
I've never.
Oh, wow. God. Wow. Oh my God. My grandmother had it. So yeah, back to tea. So tea, I don't know if you know this, but it was like a boogeyman around this time. It was people like moral panicked about tea. Tea was like the gay community back then.
Trans?
Yeah, the trans community, totally.
Oh my God.
So tea consumption was deemed suspect and even sinful by a large segment of the American public. Abigail Adams called it that baneful weed.
Oh my God. And we were drinking what, coffee or just not consuming caffeine at all?
I'm not sure.
I don't know if we had a source for coffee at that point. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we did. I think it was just tea. And I thought everyone was drinking tea until researching this story. I'm like, I didn't know tea was bad. Tea to me is so mild compared to coffee. Like, what?
It was moral panic for the purpose of rich people to get richer. I mean, like, it's an invented moral panic. It's like trans rights and
it was invented, but it's like I'm gonna get into it, but it's like the usual sort of issues of like anyone's that's different, there's
the
some races
they use the Bible to justify it.
Yeah. Of course there's racism because this is because we are us. So
because you know how black people love to drink tea.
It was Asian people. But anyways, I'm gonna get into it. So
of course. Oh my God.
Yeah. So to her and other people, tea was considered a recreational drug. Like, girl, recreational drug. It is crazy, right? Yeah. So there at this time there were these people who were like promoters of virtue and who had been long pointing at the evils of tea. After this destruction of tea, they become patriots instead of just like crazy people screaming about tea for some reason. They're now like in fashion and in vogue. So there's
all what this is kind of giving me is
what?
Is the marijuana industry and how like weed is bad and it's immoral, but the government can tax it and it's way more expensive. But if you buy it from a drug dealer and that's criminal.
God, totally. Yes. That is the parallel. That is the modern parallel for sure. Yeah. Yeah. You nailed that. Wow. I didn't even think about that. It's so true. Yeah. It's trash, y'all. This is trash. So there's all these people who again have been like on their little soapbox pointing at tea and like no one's paying them any mind because it's like it's fucking tea, girl, get off it. But after the destruction of the tea, it now becomes this movement, this like revolutionary symbol. Tea, you know, tea is just so bad. Tea is a tool of our oppressors, etc. I know. So there was a very concerned writer in a Virginia newspaper, and I'm just like, this is so classic. This is very Virginia. So they claim that ever since tea had been introduced into Western society, and like once I read this, this is from Howard Zinn. Once I read Western society, I'm like, oh, this is about to be some shit. This is about to be some really racist shit. Like, let me just prepare my mind. And I was not wrong. So this writer went on to say that, yeah, ever since tea had been introduced to into Western society, our race is dwindled and has become puny, weak, and disordered to such a degree that were it to prevail a century more, we should be reduced to mere pygmies.
This is like Marjorie Taylor Greene saying that straight people are going to go extinct.
Correct. Yes. That is exactly what I thought about when I read this. I'm like, wow, this is... like, country. I laughed at her. I know this country. I know. It also, like, so deep.
To know that it has been like this from the very fucking beginning. Since before the beginning.
Since before the beginning. Since before the beginning of this country.
It kind of makes me feel better about the way things are now. Because it's just this is just human nature. This is just the way we do shit.
Yes. Yeah. That is how I felt too. Because I think some people could go the opposite way and feel really demoralized. Like, oh, we've been doing this forever. And I'm like, no, this is just who we are.
It is fucked up.
Yeah.
And it's never going to end, I guess. But like.
Yeah. I don't think it's never going to end. I think the more that we realize the pattern and can see it for what it is, we can change.
We've had, what, 250 years to figure it out. And here we are still.
No, but like the story that we tell about the Boston Tea Party. Ain't this, you know?
Well, that's the thing, is like, we, in theory, we've had all this time to figure it out, but we don't know the details because nobody's talking. We're literally, American history is lies as it's taught in schools. I mean,
as it's taught in schools. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think more and more people are reading history books like Howard Zinn's, and like they have access to the internet. And I do think things are changing. Not only will they change, they're changing now, and that gives me hope. But like, it's so crazy, but also it does make me feel better. I feel less crazy knowing history personally.
Totally. Yeah. I mean,
like seeing the thread in the past, like seeing like, okay, I can trace this back, like I'm not going crazy, like they saw this then, but we just never learned it. And here we are.
it's nuts. Like, this is so, it's not even a thread. It's the same thing.
It's the same. Right. It is the same.
It's just the same shit over and over and over on repeat with different players.
Yeah.
If it's not the British East India Company, it's fucking Amazon or Walmart or whatever. Like, if it's not tea, it's weed. If it's not pygmies, it's trans people.
Pygmies. Like, pygmies.
Are we even talking about pygmies?
I'm like, when I read that, I'm like, when in doubt, racism. Like, what? Pygmies? Get the fuck out of here. So, and this is just going on this this thread of people, experts, mind you, the dangers of tea, you guys. Watch out. It's going to make you into a pygmy.
The devil's lettuce.
That baneful weed, you mean?
Weed. Yes.
You mean like what? Okay. So pointing there was this really prominent surgeon in Boston who, I guess, he wrote a bunch of like op-ed articles in the Boston Gazette, and he just was almost like the Dr. Phil, like the star doctor. People went to him for advice. Oh, he was like a Dr. Oz.
I was just going to say.
Meaning a con. He was a con.
Just like I thought. Trash.
Trash, yeah. So this guy, his name is Dr. Thomas Young. He was pointing to his medical expertise in talking about tea in, you know, papers.
Oh, God.
So he, braced your fucking self. Hold on to your butts, y'all. So he called tea a pernicious drug. And he went on to say that it is a slow poison that has the corrosive effect upon those who handle it. Bitch, is it acid? corrosive effect. Okay, sure.
Oh my God.
He goes on to say, I have left it off since, he said, I have left it off since it became political poison. It's tea.
Political poison.
Yeah.
Oh my God. But like, I'm sorry, Rattleskull is fine. You're like, no big deal.
Right? Yeah.
Just keep drinking your fucking like weird bootleg Applejack that you froze in your front yard. And,
yeah, like, that's giving you like brain cancer because it's like so impure and there's just all the bacteria in it. But yeah, go off. So like, he said, tea. Yeah, since he got away from this poison, he says that I have since gained in firmness of constitution. My substitute is chamomile flowers. Bitch, that's also tea. Bitch, that's also tea. Respectfully, sir, so you sound dumb.
I love that he was like, he's like, I switched from PG tips to sleepy time.
Yes. And I switched from tea to tea. And my constitution has never felt better.
Oh my God, that sleepy time tea. Just I'm a changed man.
He's a better man because he's not messing with that drug. He's not on that dope that's called black tea.
Well, so, you know, it's called black tea for a reason.
Oh, you know, once I said that, I'm like, oh, you're right. So, oh no. So resistance leaders, they also launched a new wave of just like the worst nativist propaganda that played into these anti-Chinese sentiments that were already active at the time. They claim that tea from the East India Company was packed by the stomping of barefoot, flea-infested Chinese feet.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Ignoring the fact that tea smuggled in like via Holland,
like where do you
also
think that
came from fucking China?
Yeah, literally, where do you think that the Dutch are getting their tea? Where do they like, you think they grew it in fucking Holland? Come on, Barbara.
But also they're like the caucasity of being concerned about people's feet when you're not washing your legs.
Oh my
like,
God,
it is that. And for me.
And also on top of that, fleas don't live on your feet. There's nothing on your foot for a flea to live on.
Look at you trying to make sense out of racism.
I shouldn't have even said that because it don't make no sense, and I'm not going to make sense of it.
It doesn't
make sense out of nonsense.
You can't make sense out of nonsense. So because of all of this, I mean, people were just very, very influenced by these newspaper people, these elites in charge. They were really good at messaging. I mean, similar to how the right is now. They really got a number of colonists, you know, believing that they had like the good safety and that, you know, anything else was, you know, suspect.
The smugglers got.
Yeah, I know, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like,
well, that is where the deviation between the weed industry and the tea thing. It's the other way around, where the tea, the dispensaries are like, no, it's safe. You know what I mean? Like,
no, but this is like, it was like a kind of like a buy American vibe. In like not by Chinese. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Because
which again is with us right now still. Yeah.
Yes. It's like by American smuggled from Holland, from China, but don't tell anyone. Shh. You're just putting their fingers to the other people's lips. Shh.
Trash.
Okay.
So
yes.
Smuggled. Doo-doo-doo.
Proudly smuggled by Americans.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Proudly smuggled by Americans. Incredible. So this whole, there's so many themes. It was hard for me to really, when I started researching this story, really find like one note about, because there's just so many intersecting issues that are so fascinating that are still happening today. But I had no clue. I'm just like, wow, this is like everything is in this story in a way. We have anti-Chinese racism. We have the war on fucking drugs. We have anti-corporate sentiment. We have like something that's too big to fail. Like it's just, it has everything. Wild. So the morning after.
I was just going to say, and like lies that we have been taught.
Oh, since, yeah.
Since childhood. The fact that this story is so unbelievably different from the story that we learned as children.
Night and day.
Is. Like, it should be illegal to lie to people about history in schools. Yeah.
But it's like, this story is so riveting because it has everything. And yet, but also it has everything that we don't want to talk about.
Well, and that's the thing. They don't want people to be interested in history. So they're not going to tell us the real shit because it's too interesting.
Yeah. Oh, the story has so much. I could do like minis that like spun out of my research for like years, perhaps. But yeah. So the morning after, John Adams, he penned a letter. You know, John Adams is like one of the patriots. He's a signer of the Declaration. He penned a letter to his friend, James Warren. He wrote, "The die is cast. The people have passed the river and cut away the bridge. Last night, 3 cargoes of tea were emptied into the harbor. This is the grandest event which has ever yet happened since the controversy with Britain open. The sublimity of it charms me."
Okay, girl.
Right? I'm just like, also, are you?
How much tea are we talking here? Like, how much do you know? Do you have an idea of like how much 3 cargoes is?
It was like, what is it? 45 tons? It was 45 tons of tea, and that wasn't all of their tea. That was just what was in the harbor in these 3 ships. It was a lot of fucking tea. Die is cast. Yeah, it fucking charms him, whatever. But this opinion was far from universal. If anything, like the opposite was true. For Americans who called themselves patriots at this time, the slogan of like liberty and property were the biggest emphasis. It was like even bigger than no taxation without representation was the like front and center. It was sadly property, like it was property and liberty, but mostly property. And the fact that property like, was destroyed was like,
yeah. What about the free market, Sam?
Yeah. Not Sam. Yeah. So George Washington, he, you know, everyone loves G-Dub, OG-Dub.
OG-Dub.
He was among many prominent, like, leaders of the time who came out and, like, kind of scolded Boston for their actions.
Wow.
He said that their conduct in destroying the tea was a stain on the nation.
Huh.
Benjamin Franklin, or, you know, B. Franklin, father of Frankie Franklin. I will never forget that. Like, I could not believe that you were just like, Frank. I'm like, wait, his name is Frankie Franklin?
Frankie Franklin.
What the fuck?
Oh my God.
You said he died of embarrassment. He died of smallpox, but we shouldn't be laughing. But also, maybe a little bit. He died of embarrassment.
Enough time has passed. It's okay to have a chuckle.
Yeah. Oh my God, I laugh. So I laugh. I feel like I laugh myself into a sweat when you say that he died of embarrassment. Because it was so good, so wrong. But be frank, he came out. Similarly to OG Dub, he said that the East India Company should be compensated for its losses. Hmm. You know, won't someone think of the
poor
property?
Them. Yeah. Oh, Lord. Who's going to compensate them? You don't even have a government. You're a colony.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to get into it a little bit, but yeah, they tried to like round up people. Thankfully, most people were keeping their fucking mouths shut. as they should. So fast forward 50 years, like I'm kind of jumping ahead and I'm going to jump back, but like 50 years past this destruction of the T, or the action with the T is another way that they at the time referred to this event. There was no celebration 50 years after this happened. And that is very odd, because colonists fucking celebrated everything. They celebrated things at the 10-year mark, let alone the 50-year mark. They were like, they were just, I think a lot of it was because they were drunk all the time, and like, why why not celebrate things? Sure.
Yeah.
But 50 years, they were not talking about this event at all. Like, for decades, Americans, or, you know, American colonists, they did not want to talk about it. And they definitely did not consider it the Boston Tea Party. Like, that's a fucking lie. Most people at the time, like most white people at the time, they viewed this destruction of tea as an act of vandalism that put the revolution in a bad light. And they did not want to even acknowledge that it happened in their city.
Weird. They had strong words for other white people?
Yeah. Well, it was like, it was that contradiction of like thinking that they were like the good, like peaceful type. That
not
was,
these but it was, nasty but the smugglers. British,
no, but like the British were these aggressors. Like we were following the rules. We were doing all the right things. And then the British, you know, they wanted to take all our money, and we had to fight then. They didn't want to talk about all of the uprising. This was a big one. So right after it, this happened, fucking crickets. Anyone who had anything to do with the event could face prosecution, or at the very least a lawsuit, because they were really out for like financial compensation for the loss of their fucking tea. And people fucking knew. Boston was big, but it wasn't like that big. And the people that were involved were the Sons of Liberty, who like they were not like in the shadows. These were prominent members of the community. And yes, a lot of them on this night, they disguised themselves as indigenous people. Or some of them just put like soot on their face, like they blacken their face, and it's just like, fucking Jim, I can see you. Like I can see you, and I know what you did. But people kept their mouths shut. Publicly, no one said a word. So back to the tea. It was not the action against the tea that pulled Americans together. It was the British clapback that did.
Ah, I see. Okay.
It was the clapback.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So in the several years that followed, there were a series of laws that were dubbed by the British the Coercive Acts, but by the American colonists, they called them the Intolerable Acts. So Parliament, they closed the port of Boston, which was huge. Like Boston was a huge shipping hub. So much money flowed into Boston. They shut down Boston Harbor. They revoked Massachusetts' charter, and they denied citizens the rights that they had enjoyed for over a century and a half. And the goal of these, the goal of these coercive acts were to isolate these, like, you know, radicals. In Massachusetts, the Sons of Liberty. But instead, like the downstream consequence was that all of the colonies united with Boston and said, absolutely not, you're not gonna do this to us. So all 13 colonies, they linked up like Voltron, and they said, no girl, no, what we're not gonna do is this. So they formed the Constitutional Continental. They formed the Continental Congress, not the Constitutional Congress. I'm like, that's a B flat.
Convention?
Yes, that's what I was thinking of. But they formed the Continental Congress.
Yes.
And agreed to mount a general boycott of all British goods at a time when the crown needed that coin.
Yeah.
They needed that money, honey. This was not the time to fuck with Britain, and this is why we went to war. So the destruction of the tea, it was the spark for events that would sprawl into our push for independence. and its belligerent tone and its property damage, it ran counter to the narrative, you know, favored by patriots, quote unquote patriots at the time. They're like, maybe we don't talk about this so loudly because, like, we did bad things. So you know, myth needed to be created eventually. So after after the revolution was over, the nation was on its own, this event was still very, very tough to mythologize properly because this new leadership, they wanted to maintain law and order. They didn't want people to think like, okay, maybe we can just put on costumes and like overthrow the shit. So they didn't want to talk about this, you know, this destruction of the tea. They didn't want to talk about how all these smugglers and these rebels, like, they like brought hatchets and shit. Like, I mean, they didn't hurt anyone, but like they, you know, they had weapons and they,
and they didn't want people to be like, oh, we could do that too.
Yes.
Cause then they were in charge after that.
Yes. They did not want to give people ideas, but in the 1820s, so enough time has passed now because this happened in 1772, enough time had passed. There was this new generation of writers who wanted, you know, they wanted that American story. They wanted to have this like moment, this like linchpin, this like, this is why we did the revolution type of, you know, lie, essentially. They wanted the big lie, and they found it in, they rebranded this event as the Boston Tea Party. They played up the carnival atmosphere, the fact that they were wearing costumes, the fact that like some of them were like drinking because, you know, why the fuck not? You're doing crime, like you might as well have a good time.
I mean,
so they renamed this, you know, the destruction of the tea, or the action against the tea, which is how it was known at the time. They now called it the Boston Tea Party.
Yeah.
Once the story could be told playfully, it became this like popular kid story. Kids don't know any better. They love to fucking dress up. And they hear that like there were adults that were dressed like Indians. I'm going to dress like an Indian.
Kids love a tea party.
they do love a tea party. Oh my god, this works on so many levels. So there, unfortunately, is this is what became our school texts, and even sadder still, this is what became our adult texts. Our adult texts as well.
That's, it's this declawed,
simplified version of all of these like intersecting events that all happened that were very revolutionary at the time, were just simplified and also erased of its economic and political content and power. Like, this shit was revolutionary, but like, not, like I said, not for the reasons that we learn about in school. There was a corporate fucking tax break that lowered the price of tea in America by eliminating the corporate tax. Like, bitch, you're not paying any corporate tax. Like, what?
Everyone should be cheering, but
yeah. What? And the whole like things that are too big to fail, our issue with competition. We love free market, and yet we also kind of hate competition in a free market. And we like to have these big monopolies that become too big to fail. This story just, and also racism, like the whole fucking anti-Chinese, like, oh, the tea is tainted with fleas. You're getting tea from the same source, sir and madam? What? This story just had so much. When I started to look into it, I'm like, I'm going to fucking tell this story because it's like, it is so wild. And this, it's way more than a party. And I want people to know that the end.
Oh my god, thank you for telling that. That it was so unbelievably enlightening and and like, I so foundational and so like why have none of us ever heard this story before?
I heard this in passing on another podcast.
That is unbelievable.
On a podcast that talked about the red fart instead of the red wave. They mentioned like in passing that like, oh, the Sons of Liberty, they were wealthy merchants and smugglers, and they weren't like the people, you know, the people in the sense that we think of the people.
Sure.
And they were pushing for their own interests. They were mad that there was cheap tea in the colonies. Bitch, that's what?
I also feel like I need to, I just want to point out the fact that like in my last full episode, when I talked about the Detroit uprising, I talked about the fact that words matter, words have meaning.
Yeah.
And like, if you look at all of these different events over the course of history, we call the Boston Tea Party a party.
A party,
We call the Whiskey Rebellion a rebellion.
Rebellion, you're right. Yeah.
But when it comes to Black people
having
uprisings against the police, it's a riot.
It's a riot. Yeah. Oh, I didn't even like draw that parallel, even though I just heard that story. You tell it live. Yeah, yo, that's real. Yeah. I mean,
it was real. Like literally, I had to go through my outline because I was pulling research from other places and doing a lot of like, you know, copying and pasting and then rewriting things.
Yeah.
But like every single source, everything, even very progressive people talking about this still call it the Detroit riot, because I mean, that's what it is called in history.
Yeah,
it's the Detroit riot.
I think with millennials, we are starting to, like you said, realize that words have meaning, and we are starting to change the words that we learned as children and even as young adults. Like, this is something that I consciously have to do.
Absolutely.
Especially when it comes to like slavery and like enslaved people, like all these things, like this has been very recent. I mean, it's so overdue, but it's only been very, like, I would say within the last like 5 years that people are really talking about how we need to be careful with our language because our words have power.
Yes, and absolutely.
Using the words that they use it's not the way. And I edit a lot of my stories and I'm just like, no, I'm not saying that because that's not true.
I had to like search through the whole story for the word riot, and I only left it in places where it was in direct quotes. But like the fact that the Whiskey Rebellion,
this is called a party.
Yeah, I know. The Whiskey Rebellion, those people literally tarred and feathered people and like stripped people naked. Like, and that's
Liberty. Rebellion? Yeah, the Sons of Liberty are the ones who started the tarring and the feathering.
Of course, as
a punishment. Yeah. And it's there's so
much.
Yeah,
they
there.
Get that's, you know, that's not a riot. It's a rebellion or a party. I'm going to start calling it the Detroit party.
Yeah. They just need to be wearing like really racist costumes, and then it's really a party.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. Right. It's funny. I'm like, I thought this was going to be so short, and this is very long, but it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We took a break.
All right. Well, thank you for telling that story. It was so good, so important for people to know the real story behind this. Yeah.
And the fact that like we all can see the thread. I mean, it's not even a thread. It's like pulled from the headlines. Like we are living in the same timeline that this happened, just like so many hundred years later. Yeah. And I still like that does not demoralize me. Like for me, this knowledge gives me power. And it gives me like a firm footing to know like, no. There is a reason why people are pushing against corporate power. And this has happened for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
But we don't learn about it. And I really do think if we learned about it, things would be different.
Yeah.
I know that they would. Sure. I absolutely know that they would. Because I think Europe still has a lot of trash legacy, but like they learn history, and because of it they change in ways. Could they change in bigger ways? Absolutely. But like they change in ways that we have not, because we don't have that knowledge. We don't learn about what happened.
Yeah
100%. We get lies, we get myth.
It's wild. All right, well,
yeah.
That was incredible. I like really so good. Thank you for telling that. My drink has long done been empty.
This drink was delicious. Like I feel like it paired really well. Like I felt like, oh, I'm like in a tavern and back in the day.
Totally.
And
I
have scurvy.
Well, that's why there's lime juice in there.
So yeah, right. I'm avoiding. I'm having it medicinally because I don't want scurvy.
All right. Well, thank you again. And I guess we're done. America's history is juicy. We just add porter beer and rum and lime juice and all sorts of funky shit.
Try it. It's real good, y'all.
Real no big good. Deal.
A little bit of rum.
Thank you guys so much for listening. This has been Beyond Reproach. And a big thank you to our audio editor, Dev. We could not do this without you.
Yes, we could not. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Thank you for listening to Beyond Reproach. Please note that we are not historians. We're just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. A full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a written review on Apple Podcasts or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Don't forget to follow us on social media and make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop on beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. And we also have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.